focus on one thing, be very, very niche. And when you're starting out, really dive in on one thing specifically and then just dive in on that. And then from there, once you build that one thing, then you can branch out.
So today we talked to a guy named Eric Schaefer. Now he's a young guy. So if you've got somebody out there that's in their 20s, this is the episode to listen to. So what we do is we talk about how Eric walked off the stage at high school graduation, looked his military recruit in the eye, and said, "When can I start?" He goes into the military for a little bit, gets to college for 2 years, and realizes, hey, college is not for him. He then starts down the road of real estate. He bounces around a little bit, starts wholesaling, then gets into being an agent, and then he realizes that being focused on one thing and being great at one thing is the key to unlocking exponential wealth. We're going to tell you the one thing that he did that catapulted him from $5,000 or $6,000 a month in income to $50,000 or $60,000 a month in income in less than 6 months. You're going to love this episode with Eric Schaefer. Eric, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, man. Excited to be here.
So Eric is in the real estate space. He's young. 24 years old. So he's in the real estate space. He started light years ahead of where I was when I started at 37. So I want you to go back. So one of the things is, like, I want to go back to where you, how you grow up. Tell me about growing up.
So growing up, I grew up mostly my mom. Parents are separated. So mom always struggled with financially. So I got the drive from her. And then my dad ran a successful medical sales company. So yeah, he ran that. He took it over from my grandfather. And I got the abundance mindset from my father and kind of the drive from my mother. So
what did your mom do for a job?
She was on disability. She had a lot of back issues. So she had multiple surgeries in and out of the hospital. So basically she used to do mortgage sales. So she used to be a mortgage broker. And then from there she married my father, had kids, obviously me and my brother. And then, she tried to do work here and there, but after her back surgeries, it's just so hard to work. Yeah.
So go in high school. Tell me what you were in high school. Like, what was high school life like?
High school, I was definitely a different kid. Probably say I was a little bit of a troublemaker.
Yeah.
Not bad. But I was definitely different. I always took a different path than people. That's kind of what made me stand out from most people, I would say. I didn't really want to take the route of, like, you know, going to college, going to Auburn, get my engineering degree. I always took a different route. So I wanted to do something in business from high school. So
when you were a kid, middle school, high school, and someone came up to you and just said, "Hey, Eric, what do you want to be when you grow up?" What did you say?
Well, at that time, I was really interested in the military as well.
Mm.
So I really wanted to go into the military. I didn't, just like everybody else, you know, we're all young. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But I knew the military or business is what I wanted to do. So I would either say an answer like, you know, I want to go be in the military and then transition into the into business, find something that's applicable in the military to apply in the business world. So I'd basically be my answer.
So leaving high school, what did you do?
Leaving high school, so it's kind of a funny story. I was going into my senior year, I really knew I wanted to join the military. I was going to go straight from college to the military. And then leaving high school, I was I pretty much walked off the stage with my diploma. I walked up to my recruiter. He's a Marine Corps recruiter. I gave it to him and I said, "Hey man, when can I leave?" He's like, "You ship out in 2 weeks, get ready."
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Which is really different because, I mean, you're not old. And so you graduated from high school 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. There aren't many kids that I know that, like, I want to go to the military. I mean, mm-hmm. Now they're out there, but I don't know any of them. So where did that military thought come from?
I asked myself the same question. I don't really know. Like, my grandfather was in World War II.
Okay.
I guess that gave me a little bit of interest, but it's always something I wanted to do. It was a big accomplishment I wanted to accomplish in life. So it's just, I don't know, it's just the drive of it. And I watched a lot of military movies. I knew some military individuals growing up.
Yeah.
My best friend's godfather was a first sergeant in the Marine Corps. He was probably the coolest guy I've ever met, he's very respectable.
Yeah.
So after talking with him, he was in Vietnam, the Korean War, and I always looked up to military individuals, so it's just something I wanted to take part in.
So you go to the military, then what?
So military, I joined as the reserves.
Okay.
So went from high school, 2 years of training, And then I went to college while in the reserves. So I always, like, my big thing when I was little, I always knew I had to get college done. My whole family went to college. And it was just
peer pressure,
big time.
Or not peer pressure, just family pressure.
Yeah, family pressure as well. And it was just an expectation of me and my brother to go to college. And, like, that's just something that my dad, my mom drilled in my head. So after high school, military for 2 years. And then in 2019, spring of 2019, I went to college and then just went from there into college. I was at Auburn University for about 2 years. So
did you finish college?
I did not.
So why? Why did you not finish college? Because, I mean, you had this pressure. You gave it 2 years. That's a lot. Why didn't you finish?
Early on into college, like, college was fun. I just felt like I was mostly funding college myself. Like, my father helped me a little bit in the first semester and then half the semester after that. But it was really just, I didn't finish it, number one, because I didn't like it. I wasn't really retaining information from it. I felt like I wasn't fulfilling what I could be doing at my age.
Yeah.
So COVID, well, I was in college, like I said, for 2 years, and then COVID came around. And by the time COVID came around, I already was just addicted to real estate. That's all I wanted to do.
So how did you get into real estate in college?
When my attention wasn't really on college, because I knew it wasn't something that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It kind of, like, my father was in, he did a little bit of real estate outside of his medical sales. And it's something that always stemmed to me, just like the military did.
Sure.
And I started watching videos. I even got to the point towards the end of my college career that I was skipping class just to go to college, or just to go to learn real estate. So I would skip class and go read real estate books. I would skip class and go to other real estate classes in college. So that's when
just,
I knew.
Just pop in them things.
Just pop in.
I'm not even in here, Susie, but I'm going to sit and just listen.
Yeah, professor.
Really?
Yeah, he would be calling out names, and I'd be like, yep, I'm John.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you can learn real estate in college.
Yeah.
So why do you think that college is not for everyone?
I just think there's way more opportunity out there than college. You know, with the internet, it's providing so much opportunity, especially to the youth, people my age. So things like, I mean, you can open up your laptop with the right team and the right knowledge. You can make millions of dollars just from your laptop. So
We've met before, and a lot of this information, we're only 5 or 6 minutes in, and I didn't know some of this stuff. So you made the comment before that you think that starting a business in your 20s is a superpower. Why is it a superpower to start business in your 20s?
Well, number one, I think the biggest thing is that for me, I have all my energy. I'm in my young 20s. I have all my energy. But then again, like, I think a big thing that stops people from getting into business is they have families. They have kids to worry about, you know? And they have a lot of expectations. So with me, I'm in my young 20s. I don't have, you know, a family to uphold or anything. So that it made it a lot easier for me to transition into business.
I've got the same thing happened to me in my 20s. So when I was in my 20s, I graduated from college, and then I went started coaching. The number of hours that I spent coaching and then working on the side was astronomical. Then I get to college coaching, and then I mean, this is not an exaggeration. People think I'm crazy when I say this. We work 90 hours a week. 90, 95 hours a week coaching football in college. And I learned so much just because of the number of reps and the things that we did. So I totally understand this. And I sit there and I do not have any regrets, because the relationships I made and the things I learned doing that was crazy. But I saw the business world in my early 30s, and I had two kids. Mm-hmm. And I just sit there and go, imagine if I was 22, 23, 24 and started this thing with no wife, very little responsibilities, very little expenses, because you're right. The energy that we have in our 20s is just like, it's mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. And you, even at 24, are not like totally developed physically. Let's say that 25 to 28 is where you start hitting your full development. So I totally agree with you. So investing, where do you see a spot now in investing that's ripe to take advantage of?
I think right now is the internet, like I said.
How
so? So if you can invest in a business to where you can do everything in one location, sitting at your laptop, it may not be the sexiest business.
Sure.
But, you know, I feel like there's a lot of opportunity. Just if you can invest in something in the internet, you know, whether it be e-commerce, wholesaling, there's just a lot of opportunity from your computer that you can use.
So you mentioned wholesaling.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody out there on YouTube is going to type in, what is wholesaling? What is wholesaling?
So wholesaling, a 30,000 foot view, it's basically where you do some kind of marketing to get leads coming in, just like any other business. You do some kind of marketing, whether it's you calling, you have someone else calling for you, you're running direct mail, But your whole goal is to contact homeowners and then negotiate a price that you know you can sell the deal to. So you negotiate a price, you have the seller sign a purchase and sale agreement, and then from there, you know that you have a group of investors. Let's say Joe is one of your investors. You know Joe will buy this property for more than what you have it under contract for. So let's say you put under contract with the seller with a purchase and sale agreement for $100,000. You know Joe is going to pay $120,000. So you put a purchase and sale agreement with the seller, and then you use an assignment contract with the buyer, and then you make that you give both those contracts to the title company, and you make your $20,000 spread. So
how are you finding people that will wholesale a house to you?
So right now I'm running Google ad campaigns. So PPC, it stands for pay-per-click.
Okay.
And basically what that is I bid on keywords like sell my house fast or buy my house for cash or sell my house as is. I'm bidding on those keywords, and sellers in the locations that I'm targeting will type in, you know, I need to sell my house in Birmingham, Alabama. My website will pop up, and they'll put their information in.
When you say they'll put their information in, what do you mean they'll put their information in?
So biggest things, you know, name, contact information like email and phone number and their address. And then from there, we go through our sales process to underwrite the deal.
So someone calls them. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question, because this is in my business and it's in every business. Mm-hmm. How important is it that you call somebody back fast?
It's one of the most important rules in my company. Really in all types of marketing, because PPC, if you think about it, you have all of your competitors just lined up, line after line, just waiting. And so if our rule is that ideally you call that lead within 60 seconds, because it takes them about...
Whoa.
Okay.
Susie hits your link on the Google, mm-hmm. and she puts in her name, Susie Jones,
right.
her number and her email. And you're telling me that you've got a team that calls Susie back in less than a minute.
Yep.
That is astronomical. And Sierra's behind the camera laughing because she thinks that's... And I'm on my team about doing it in one day. That is unbelievable. So once you talk to Susie on the phone, mm-hmm. where does it go from there? What does that conversation look like?
So that conversation looks like it's a sales process. So okay. We call them within 60 seconds. We have their information. We know what their name is, their email, their phone number, what they're asking for. And then from there, I basically have someone on my team, an acquisitions person. They call that lead. They qualify that lead. And the way we qualify that lead is, I can get into that, but it's a whole process. But we qualify the lead. And then from there, we set an appointment with probably myself or one of my acquisitions, my closers. And then after that, we will go take them through the whole sales process of asking questions about the house. And motivation is key in these conversations.
Motivation for the seller. Or motivation for your team?
Motivation for the seller.
The seller.
Yeah. Why are you selling the property? That is the most important thing.
What is the number one reason that people wholesale their homes to you?
People choose wholesale and companies like the company that I own for speed and privacy most of the time.
But what are they saying the reason they need to sell their home is, though?
Could be foreclosure. It could be bankruptcy. It could be divorce. Could be, you know, it's probated and they don't want to do it. They're in another state. Just a number of reasons. So
it's an emotional time.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you in your heart feel like you're helping these people?
Yes. Yeah. So our
company, because I'm sitting here listening to you going like, I get this, mm-hmm. and I get that you're playing on people's emotions, but there's a part of me that goes, Susie types in, I need to sell my home fast, and you're calling her in 60 seconds and she's going, oh my God, this guy's going to give me this much for my house.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Do you get a lot of thank yous?
Yeah, I mean, really the biggest thank yous that we get, I've had a family here in Birmingham that was in foreclosure, and they had a foreclosure date in 7 days. Nobody could buy their property. Nobody could afford their property because they owed so much based on what the house was worth. So we caught up their payments before we bought the house, and I had this seller like crying on the phone, just thanking us for, you know, not letting the bank foreclose on him, you know, giving him an opportunity for another step in his life. So
tell me about your journey of wholesaling.
So my journey of wholesaling, I started in 2021 when I was back at home. I was working a job at Lowe's doing cold calling, just picking up numbers on Spokio. It's a internet where you can look up people's numbers.
Okay.
And then from there, I would call and call and call, ask people, hey, do you want to sell your house? Do you want to sell your house? Do you want to sell your house? finally got my first yes. It was, I didn't even know what to do. She said yes.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
I mean, I was like, what do I say? I paused for like 3 or 4 seconds and I just rolled into the close. I was like, all right, we can give you this much for your house. Let me go see it. And then from there, I closed that deal. I was making about $3,000 a month at my job at Lowe's. I made $3,000 in that one deal. I doubled my income like that. And from there, I was like, I was addicted. And I called the same seller back and she had another property to sell. And I just decided to flip it. So I went from wholesaling into flipping on my second deal.
You made your first sale. Where did it go from there?
So from there, after I did that wholesale deal, I took that money and put it into my account. And then I had this next deal that this seller said that she wanted to sell as well.
Okay.
And I just said, I can do it. I went straight into flipping it. So I bought it for about $28,000.
The house?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
I bought it for pretty much all the money I had in my bank account. I just put it into the house, and then I got 2 business credit cards, and I funded the rehab with the business credit cards. And then after I rehabbed it, from there, I put it on the market, and it sold, and I made...
How much did you make?
$30,000.
Boom! Yep. Let's go. 30 yeah. grand. Okay, so you sold a, you wholesaled a house for 3 grand. Mm-hmm. You got another contract. You decided to flip that house. For those mm-hmm. who don't know, a flip... is you buy a house, you put add value to it, you fix the counters, you put new floor, you paint the walls, whatever. Then you sell it for a higher price, mm-hmm. and you made 30 grand on that. So here we are, extremely new into wholesaling. Where does it go from there?
So from there, during that deal, I just kind of felt like I took a lot of risk at that point. So I wanted to learn more before I advanced into my business. So I was, at this time, I'm also an agent. So I joined a real estate team who not only did the agency side, but they also flipped houses. They did investing and everything. So I joined that real estate team in hopes to learn more about the business from professionals like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So from that's what I joined that team, was on that team for about 1.5 years and just learned everything I could from them. Every drop of information I could get from them, I did while I was providing value with them as
okay.
well. So.
Were you wholesaling at the same time? Or did you stop wholesaling?
I was mostly, I mean, I did a little bit of wholesaling in there. Yeah. I was also in the agency side, but I would mostly wholesale to the actual buyers of that real estate team.
So you're an agent, and then I know this part of the story. So you're an agent. You get out of being, you're probably still an agent, but like mm-hmm. you transition back into wholesaling more full time.
Yep.
What made you do that?
It's just the wholesaling business makes a lot more sense to me. Like I'm not a good agent, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fit my personality. It's more of like a, I feel like you have to be more of a therapist as an agent. So it just didn't fit my personality very well. So I knew I could do well in wholesaling. It just made more sense for my personality. So that's why I just dove straight into wholesaling again.
So when you get back into it for the second time, full steam ahead,
mm-hmm.
Tell me about that journey.
So that journey, just getting back into wholesaling, I really got serious about the business as far as, you know, paying for marketing, starting to outsource some of my marketing, like cold calling and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I just really got serious and buckled down on the business and really started learning from other people to learn how to advance in the business quicker.
So you started growing in wholesaling. Okay. If you could do anything different in your wholesaling career, what would it be?
100%. I would have hired a coach immediately.
Tell me about this. So the backstory is, I know the answer to this story and it's absolutely fascinating. And I love this part of the story. So if you're into wholesaling, you need to listen to this part. So tell me again, what would you have done differently in wholesaling?
So like I said, I would definitely hire a coach as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. It is a barrier to entry, which is the fee to buy the coach. Mine was, I believe, $8,000 just to buy into it. After that, my business 10x'd.
Tell me about the story of you and your friend that are kind of on the same path.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did something and then you decided to do it later.
So when I joined that real estate team, that's when he joined the same mentorship I'm in right now. Fast forward about 1.5 years later, I joined that mentorship as well. He's doing, at that time, he was doing about 200 grand a month.
Okay. In income.
Income, and I'm over here just scratching.
How much are you making? He's making 200 grand a month. What are you making?
Maybe 5 to 7, maybe.
So he joined the mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
1.5 years later, he's making $200,000 a month.
Right.
You're fighting your balls off, and you're making $5,000 to $7,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You regroup with this guy, and you're like, "Hey, dude, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm doing this much." What did you do from that point?
I said, I'm doing the wrong. I got to hire this coach immediately.
So you hired that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you hire? Can you tell me?
Yeah, his name's Nick Perry.
Nick Perry.
He runs the Seven-Figure Cartel.
Perfect. That's mm-hmm. I love that. Let's promote that guy. So you joined this. Tell me about the trajectory since you joined that mentorship.
So since I joined Nick Perry in the Seven-Figure Cartel, I joined him, I think it was beginning of 2023, so beginning of last year. And it took me a couple months to figure out the marketing and everything. And then when I got that dialed in, my business literally, like I said, 10x'd within a span of a month. So I went from $5,000 months, so, you know, four-figure months to five-figure months, making, you know, 40, 50, 60 grand in a month after that.
Wow. What do you think the difference is? What do you know the difference is in having someone to coach you and not having someone to coach you?
So having someone to coach you, obviously, you know, in business, we always have these questions. And with a coach, they can answer it real time. They have the knowledge, they have the experience, they know they've been exactly where you were, but, you know, years prior. So they can give you just the walkway to be where you want to be and go where you want to go.
What are two of the most important things that you learned in that mentorship?
Marketing and sales.
Go deeper there.
So marketing, like I said, I was running, when I started, I was doing cold calling and SMS, so texting. Nick Perry is big, big, big on PPC. So that's pay-per-click, the Google Ads marketing. Yeah. So he taught me that, you know, the ins and outs of it, what to put in your copyright, which is just pretty much what the ad says. And then that's the whole marketing piece. And then sales, he really taught me, you know, how to be on the phone, how to talk to sellers, how to really connect with these sellers and be a friend. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
So the marketing part, did they give you scripts? Because I hear all the time people talking about your sales. Do they like provide you scripts of things like, this is what you need to say?
Absolutely. They have a whole Google Drive of just scripts. And, you know, any piece of information you need, because I never use a script. I never liked scripts. I felt like a robot. I was very robotic on the phones. So a script made me more robotic. So a script, they taught me that it makes business repeatable.
Sure.
So if you can have an acquisitions rep, do the same thing over and over. It's a scalable business. It makes your business scalable.
Did you start running the scripts?
I did very well.
Do you sound more natural after you do it 50 times?
Absolutely. So working in the scripts, I definitely, like I said, I was robotic at first, but running the script, like, I don't say it line for line anymore. It just kind of keep me on track in the sales process. So, you know, it's just like step one, two, three, four, five in the close and in the script.
Tell me about, where do you want to grow from here in the wholesaling business?
So growing from here in the wholesaling business, my goal is to get the wholesaling business to 100 grand a month and then beyond. And then I want to take that business and fund my other business ventures, such as like larger multifamily. You know, I want to start building wealth and investment properties, triple net leases and industrial real estate, also buying small businesses. Cody Sanchez is
sure.
big on that.
Yeah. Love that. How do you grow to $100,000 a month in wholesaling?
Marketing, sales, and a great team.
Tell me about your team.
So my team right now is small. I have three people on my team. It's myself, an acquisitions rep, and a transaction coordinator.
Three people.
Well, yeah, three people.
Three people total. Mm-hmm. How many more people do you need to hire to get to $100,000 a month?
I need one more acquisitions rep, and I would say I need two more dispositions reps. So I would say I'm three hires away from that.
Why have you not hired them already?
So right now I'm working on my systems and processes. Mm-hmm. So it's important to me that I can bring someone on and onboard them seamlessly. So I'm building out my system first, and then I'll bring in more people and also up my marketing.
How much do you work right now a week?
I work from 8 to 6 every day. So whatever the math is on that, I'd say 60 hours a week.
5 days a week or 7 days a week?
I'd say 6 to 7 days a week.
6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked at one point about the Burr method.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your experience with the Burr method.
So I actually did the Burr method on accident my first time I did it.
Okay.
So explaining that, I had a deal in Southeast Lake. I bought this property, and it was intentions to be a flip. Luckily, the numbers worked out to be a Burr. So we put it on the market once we were done flipping it. We did all the rehab and everything. Everything was good to go. We put it on the market. It sat on the market. And this was towards the end, or when the interest rates were rising. So it sat on the market. We couldn't get it to sell. So we took it to a lender. He cashed us out at 80% loan to value. We got all of our money back plus about $5,000. And then we were cash flowing. We rented it out for like $1,100 a month.
You were renting it.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah. We got it rented out for about $1,100 a month. Our mortgage payment was $750. So we were cash flowing just a little bit, but that was my first Burr.
Do you still own that place?
I do.
Perfect. How many rentals do you have right now?
Just three right now.
Just three.
Mm-hmm.
How would you do the Burr method differently this next time around?
How would I do the Burr method differently? I would plan to do it correctly from the start.
How meaning, so?
So I would have my lenders lined up mm-hmm. in the front end. I did not have my lenders lined up. So as we had that flip on the market, we were paying interest every single month when I could have just cashed out, refied that property. So I had to go and find lenders. I had to find lenders who would work with investors who would cash out on a rental property. So I would have my lenders lined up, and then I would also buy the property with intentions of renting it. So the finishes that you put into a rental property are much different than a flip. So on this flip, we put very, very high finishes in there, like nice finishes. You know, your tenant doesn't care about, you know, quartz countertops and
they don't.
Stuff like that. So
I want to give you a goal. What do you need your timeline to be to get those other three people hired? What is realistic for you?
End of the year.
Mm-hmm. So what if we said October? Can you get that done by October?
Absolutely. I think so.
I'm going to hold you accountable for that.
Okay.
So I want to know. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you back in like October or November and see how this is going, because nothing excites me more than to see someone set something out that they want to do and go and absolutely kill it. So I'm going to hold you accountable to that. So we'll keep this conversation going. So how has your lifestyle changed? So you've been in this mentorship for, I don't know, a year and a half now, a little over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
How has your lifestyle changed going from making $5,000 or $6,000 a month? Let's just call it $50,000 or $60,000 a month. How has your lifestyle changed?
So I've always hated worrying about money. Like, where's my next paycheck coming from? Am I going to be able to afford this? A big thing about my lifestyle, I love freedom. I love to just kind of do what I want to do.
Let me stop you. People talk about, I want freedom. What does that mean to you?
So freedom to me means that I don't really have to answer to someone if I want to go on a vacation. I don't have to ask for time off. I can provide for my family. Like, if my family says, hey, I wish I had this, I can provide that for them, you know? So that's freedom of financial freedom, time freedom.
So I want to go back to something, because you've got something that a lot of people don't. How did your military experience help you in real estate?
My military experience definitely helped me. The biggest thing I took away from the military is you got to get up and work every single day.
Mm.
In business, you have to get the work in every single day. In the military, we get up, you know, 4, 5, 6 a.m. And the first thing we do is just work all day until the end of the day. So the work ethic was the biggest thing I took away from it.
So we talked at one point about rentals. You said you had three rentals.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want to transition to in the buy and hold game?
So once I get my wholesaling business to where I want it to be, once I scale it to where I want it to be, that's going to fund my investing side of the business. So I want to, like I said, I want to invest in multifamily real estate. I want to invest in triple net leases, like commercial property, industrial properties and stuff like that. So that's...
Let me ask this though here. And this is, if you're bringing in, let's just call it between $30,000 and $60,000 a month, what is stopping you now from, let's just say, holding $10,000 or $15,000 a month and starting investing in something now? Why would you not just start that now? Why are you waiting?
So the biggest thing in real estate's a broad term.
Sure.
So you can do a ton of different things in real estate.
Absolutely.
My focus this year has been to niche down and focus on one thing, and that's been wholesaling real estate. So because if I'm doing my wholesaling business and then I'm also trying to buy multifamily, I'm also trying to buy rentals and single family, it's just distracting me from what the goal is. And my goal right now is to build my wholesaling business to where I want it to be. So I just don't want any distractions to where I get my wholesale business, like I said, to where I want it to be, so I can invest into properties like that.
You're not spending $50,000 a month on your expenses. I've seen, you know, your lifestyle is pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing with the extra money that you make every month?
Right now I'm stacking cash.
Okay.
Mostly just stacking cash. And I'm also inputting money into my infinite banking account.
Great segue.
Yep. So I've put about $52,000 a year into my policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I put some of my funds as well.
How are you using that? Are you using your IBC account at this point yet?
I am. So whenever I go to buy flips, mostly flips, because I'm really all I'm doing right now besides wholesaling, I borrow from my infinite banking policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used that to fund my real estate purchases.
So you pull the money out, you borrow the money from your IBC account, you'll do the flip, and then when you pay it back, you'll pay it back with interest, and that money will keep going, and you don't have to go to the bank or anything.
Right.
So this is a question I like to ask all of my IBC people. If you had to do it over again, what would you do different with IBC?
I probably wouldn't have started it as soon as I did start it, to be honest. It is an advantage to start it early, but I flipped that house and then I started my policy. So I had about 70 grand saved up and I put 52 of it into this IBC account. Yeah. I would not recommend that.
Why?
Because the only downfall to IBC is the high commissions it takes to get into it. So I put in 52 grand and 16 of that was immediately taken out by commissions.
Sure.
So I only had access to the 30 whatever thousand dollars was left over. So that's why I wouldn't recommend it. It's more for people who are already doing well and they can just stash cash away. If that makes
sense. But the thing is, though, at 24, having a $52,000 policy at 24, the amount of money that you're going to silo over the next, just call it 5 years, is mm-hmm. going to be astronomical.
Right.
And the argument of the upfront cost is this. When you go start any business, there's a cost to ownership. And what you're doing with an IBC policy is you are owning the bank. You are becoming a bank. So let's just say in 10 years, you're doing $52,000 a year. In 10 years, that policy will be worth $500,000. And so you've got $500,000, probably a little bit more than that, that you have total access to at any point at the drop of a hat. That's extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the biggest mistake I made with my IBC policy is not doing more. I would have done more. Now, granted, I'm 44 right now. I would have done more in that. But you're saying you feel like it strapped you from a cash standpoint at the beginning.
Yeah, it really, like, I needed that cash to grow my business. And I did put into that policy. It is a give and a take, like I said. It grows. It's the compound interest. The sooner you start, the more it compounds over time.
Right.
But then again, it did take away cash from my business.
Yeah.
So it's kind of two ways to look at it, to be honest.
Tell me about the mentorship. Let's go back to the, what's your seven-figure cartel?
That's right.
So tell me about that, what that structure looks like, and how you're getting the information from, what's the whole process look like of being in that mentorship?
So everything's online. He has a full course, everything from A to Z. You need to know about wholesaling, a little bit of flipping here and there as well. So it's an online course. He takes you through a whole process. He shows you all the equipment you need, all the software you need, the sales process, how to hire, how to fire. I mean, everything, like I said, from A to Z.
Where are you finding your employees? Are you doing VAs? Where are you finding your people?
I do have a VA. I found her on a site called Start Virtual.
Okay.
It's owned by Pace Morby. You're familiar with them.
Yep.
And I'm also finding people on Indeed. So
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Are your two employees, are they stateside or are they foreign?
One stateside, one's foreign.
Where's your foreign VA?
She's in the Philippines.
Philippines. Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got a wonderful VA in Bosnia.
They have the best work ethic I've ever seen.
They're so reliable. Great. They're so grateful and mm-hmm. they're wonderful. The next 6 months, the goal, get to $100,000 a month, hire three more employees. What are you doing daily in order to grow that very niche down thing?
So what I'm doing daily is work dialing in my systems and up in my marketing.
What is dialing in your systems? That is a term right now that everybody uses. What does that mean?
So specifically what I've been doing over the past 2 months, what I've been really focusing on is my CRM. So I bought a new CRM and that's really where it keeps all of your leads in one spot and where you can track all of your leads, where your team works out of every single day. So building out my systems and my CRM, my follow-ups, my cadences, like my drip campaigns of like, that's really just all goes into follow-up and just having a sales process that a team can follow. So it can be, so onboarding, when I onboard these three people, it's an easy onboarding. You know what I mean?
So when you onboard these people, do you send them a bank of videos or how are you going to train these three new employees?
So it's mostly one-on-one Zoom calls. A lot of it's one-on-one, just training them through the processes, giving them the scripts, running them through like roll call or
role play.
There you go.
Yep.
So role play, we'll do role play every morning, practice the scripts. If they have questions, we have a Slack channel where they can just drop in questions on Slack. So it's just a constant learning process over time.
How much time do you spend on the phone with people every day?
With sellers or with my team?
Sellers.
I would say I spend about 15 to 20 hours a week
talking to people.
Mm-hmm. That's just on the phone.
What's your largest month of revenue so far since you've been in the mentorship?
My largest revenue was actually in March. I cleared about $102,000.
Since you've been in there, let's just say 6 months. What's an average month for you right now that you're like, okay, that's fine?
My average month would be around 70 to 80,000.
So you're not far from that $100,000 mark. Okay. We're in October. You've got your three people hired. Not December. We're in October.
December.
We're in October. You've got your three people hired. You're consistently hitting 100 to 120 a month. Where do you pivot and go from there? Because you got to have a plan.
So from there, the next step would be obviously to raise that goal, to raise the hires, raise the marketing, and raise the income we want to get per month. But once I get the business to where it's more passive, no business is ever going to be completely
no
passive.
No business is ever passive. Everybody listen to that. No business is ever passive.
Never, yeah.
Ever. That's a myth.
Right.
So investing is passive.
Exactly.
But a business is not passive. Mm-hmm. And I get so tired of hearing people say, I want to get some passive income. Well, number one, you have to have active income in order to put into a business or something to get passive income.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one thing. You're not just going to make money out of thin air. So you got to take active income and you got to put it into something that makes money. And a business is never going to be passive. Now, investing is pretty darn passive.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some funds that we're doing. They're really, really easy where we're doing stuff with people that are flippers. It's very, very passive. You give money, you get a return back. You don't ever say anything. Mm-hmm. That's passive. But I get tired of hearing people say that. So how are you going to hire these new people? Are you going to go VA route? Are you going to go stateside? What's your thought there? Where are you thinking that? Because you got to start thinking of that now.
Of course. So my hiring plan right now is definitely to do everybody in the U.S. So
why?
Just because, I mean, you can't have VAs, but it's just the accent. The language barrier, their culture barrier is a big thing on the phones. Sellers can feel that when they're really emotional. They want someone they can trust. They want someone who they know, like I said, they know they can trust and they can bring them through the whole process. And just hiring people in the U.S. is definitely key to that.
Where are you going to look? Indeed?
Indeed.
Where else?
I mean, always looking for talent. Honestly, if I'm at a car, okay, if I'm looking for a car on the car salesman, sounds great. Or even a waiter or a waitress or something. If I'm at a restaurant, you can find talent anywhere.
If someone wanted to find you now because they're interested in what you're doing, where could they find you? Like an email or website or whatever. What's the best way?
Best way is probably social media.
Okay.
Instagram. So my Instagram account is just ericschafer_14.
Spell Schaefer because it's odd.
Yeah, it's E-R-I-C is Eric and then Schaefer is S-C-H. AEFER and it's _14.
What have I missed that you want to talk through and talk about?
Really just, I guess, future plans as far as, you know, going into the future and business wise and things like that.
Give me the next 5 years. If you said this is what it's going to be like in 5 years and it would be a win, what would that look like?
So 5 years from now, I want to have my business mostly passive. Like I said, I want to be passive. Mostly passive. And then I want to start, like I said, investing into multifamily commercial. So I want to, in the next 5 years, I want to have at least 100 doors. Yeah, 100 units in the next 5 years, if not more, and have that side, the investing business growing a lot quicker than the active income business. So the investing business will soon take over the active income business.
So talk about multifamily for a second, because there's two thoughts to go down multifamily. There's a syndication route where you buy, you add value in painting, in aesthetics, in whatever, and then you sell in 3 to 5 years, 7 years, whatever. Or there's a buy and hold thought process where you buy and like, hey, this is like 20. This is me for the next 20 years. Where do you want to be in the multifamily space?
I think it really comes down to per deal.
Like sure.
Every deal is different. Ideally, you want to buy that property and it feeds your family forever.
I agree with that.
Ideally. But you know, if it makes sense to sell it and the market's appreciated and it just makes sense, everybody wants multifamily, obviously you would let it go and invest that into another asset. But ideally, I would want a piece, you know, properties and to fund my family forever. That would be ideal.
What's your thoughts on short-term rental?
I don't know much about short-term rental. My brother was in the short-term rental game. He was doing the arbitrage where you rent out a property and then you re-rent it on Airbnb and you make the spread in between. I think there's so much regulation going into it. It's kind of tough, but I mean, there's still people out there killing it in the Airbnb space. So I don't think it's a dead business. I think there's a lot of opportunity in it. It's not something I would invest in yet. Maybe I would do one Airbnb, but that's probably about it.
The short terminal space, here's where my thoughts are on that, is we've got one and we have to have it rented because it's so darn expensive. Our place at the lake, Walcox Point, is wonderful. It's beautiful, but it's expensive. I don't want to sell that place and I don't want to have it rented out. We're going there this weekend, but I feel like I got to do it because I want to get the income in so it can pay for itself. We've got thoughts of me and a couple guys of let's have a place at the lake. Let's have a place in the mountains. Let's have a place at the beach, go in together and have those two or three places, short-term rental those things out and have them to go to if we wanted to. Brian Pineda, have you heard of Ryan Pineda?
I have.
Pineda says that he started out doing, like, he only buys places, short-term rental places, in spots that he wants to go. And I love that thought. Even though I don't love the short-term rental space,
mm-hmm.
I like the thought of having a place in the mountains that, that we could go to and go ski in X number of days a year. So that's kind of where I am on that. So let's just make this really casual. Where are you at?
I actually like that same idea as well. And I had the same idea as far as, you know, I want a place in the mountains. I want a place in Montana that I could not only make money from, but visit with my family. I could block out those dates.
Sure.
And that as well. So I want to know, how did you get into the short-term rental space, and how did you fund, most importantly, your short-term rental
business? That's a great question. So what happened is there's two guys, Steven and Rock, who, and then Kendall's been thrown into that mix. So we throw around ideas and thoughts all day long, every day. Like, it is probably the busiest thread I have in my phone. And Steven randomly sent me an auction site of a house that was being sold at Weiss Lake. And it was an auction. Long story, if you've probably heard before if you listen to us for any time. But we went up there, and my wife and I have always wanted a house at the lake. And then her sister had wanted a house at the lake. And so we went up to this auction, and this place was horrible. And we bought this place on auction. And we bid, just like, you know, 25, 25. I mean, we bid on the thing, and like, we won it. Well, it was a freaking crack house. No exaggeration. They were running drugs out of this place. And so we bought it. So where I funded it from was, over the years, I got a lot of Dave Ramsey in my like DNA, because I was so middle class for so long, as far as just like the normal amounts of income and stay out of debt and pay cash. So I have a lot of that in me. So by nature, I'm a conservator. And so I dollar cost average in the market since the time I was 18. Still do to this day. And so I just built up some money throughout the years, just slowly saving and slowly investing in that. And so I had money on the sidelines just sitting there. And so what we did is I bought half, and Joy, my sister-in-law, bought half. So we bought this place at the lake. Well, then we started getting into the renovation process, because it was a crap hole. Like, it was freaking awful. Smelled like a combination of smoke, piss, and just body odor. It was awful, and dog. So we bought this place, and then we funded it. We funded the first house on the property just out of cash. So we just slowly just dripped cash into fixing the smaller house. And then after that, we did a construction loan on the bigger house. Once we did the construction loan, we took out a loan and did that. Here recently, my sister-in-law and her family decided they wanted to be out. And so what I'm doing is I'm buying them out of that process. And so when I did that, I really kicked up the whole short-term rental thought. Like, we have a website, walcoxpoint.com, where you, like, if you said, hey, dude, I want to come to your place for a week in the summer, I would send you to that website, not Airbnb or VRBO, because I learned from a guy, I don't even remember the guy's name. He has a place in Texas called Live Oak Lake. The guy's done a wonderful job, and he talks about how to have, you have to have more options of where people can find you. So he built up a pretty good social media following. He dug a pond and then put little Scandinavian homes out around this pond in Waco, Texas. And he's like, hey, dude, you got to have a website. You got to have a website that people can go to and rent your place, not Airbnb.
Let me stop you there. Is that to build your personal like Airbnb brand, or is that just to get more marketing out there?
It's more marketing.
Okay.
I really don't care anything about being an Airbnb guru. Could care less. I just know that Airbnb can shut you down for anything. And I get someone that's super pissy and they want their money back because there was a fly that was caught in the house or something silly. I know that Airbnb can shut you down, and I want to have a mechanism by which I can still rent my place outside of Airbnb. You never want to be totally controlled and never dependent on one platform. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, you never want to be totally dependent on them. And it's the same with Airbnb. If I can build a wonderful place and I can run ads. So we started running Facebook and Google ads. When we run Facebook and Google ads, we don't run them to Airbnb. We run our site. And so if I can run, if it's, you know, $1,000 a night to stay there, but it's going to be $1,100 a night or $1,200 a night on Airbnb because they have to take a fee.
Right.
It's cheaper for me to send you to, for cheaper for you to go to my website and do it. So I had a kid that I coached in college. He coaches in Cookeville now. And he's like, hey coach, I want to rent your, bring my family to your place. He's like, where do I need to go? And I sent him my website so he could book there. It's seamless. It's probably easier on my website than it is on Airbnb. But as far as being a short-term rental guy, I don't know that I ever will like be totally pot committed. I've got to keep my foot in that world because my house is there, and I don't want to sell my house. I want to teach my grandkids to swim there. I want to do life there. I mean, I want to spend time and time and time and time over the years with my family. My kids are 15, 12, and 8, and I'm like, we're going this weekend. There'll be 8 or 10 of us there this weekend, all weekend. I want to do that. I want to continue to do that more. And, you know, the long-term plans with this place are, I would love to have a wellness spot where, like, we had a weight room and sauna and cold.
It's kind of your escape, your getaway.
Man, that's what I really want. It's 2.5 acres.
Oh, that's
so
beautiful.
it's pretty big place, 850 feet of waterfront. So I'd rather like to have a place that we could just go and be at. And
turn the phones off.
That's it.
Spend time with the family. That's really important.
That's it. And I want to be able to take people there that, you know, I would love. I have a vision of this. I've had a vision of having people like you and having people like Justin Kraft and Rock and Steven and Kendall and people that we do business with, like, to get away for a couple of days and just think and just talk. I mean, because lunch is great. I love having lunch with you, but, like, we get – you know, we got to stop at an hour and 15 minutes because we got to go do the rest of life. And I'd love to have a time where, like, because I believe there's so much power in people. And if I can learn something, I've learned something from you already, and you're 24 and I'm 44. If I can continue to learn from you and then you can continue to learn from me, because I do things totally different. I don't know anything about wholesaling.
Mm-hmm.
I know multifamily. Well, that's what you want to get into. What is there a time in the next 6 months to 2 years where you and I could do a deal together in multifamily? Yes, there
it's
is.
Likely, yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because here's the thing. I would say this. Your first deal in a new arena, do it with somebody else. If you want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go with other people.
Exactly.
And if I can go with someone else and learn, that's what I want to do. Because, number one, I can share the cost. Number two, we can all learn together. And number three, you know stuff. You know more stuff than I do about certain things. I know more stuff about certain things than you do. So the combination of your brain and my brain is pretty good.
It's a compounding effect.
It's a compounding effect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, would you rather own 100% of $1 million portfolio, or would you rather own 50% of a $20 million portfolio? That's a no-brainer. So that's where I'm headed there. I really enjoy being there, but I just don't love the game of short-term rental because it's so fickle.
Yep. I mean, a city could put a code or a violation on your house and shut down Airbnb in that area. And now you're out.
You're done.
Now it's a vacation home with a mortgage.
Yep.
You know,
what else?
So people my age, what would you recommend with your experience in business and growing up and going through this internet age and everything? What would you recommend people my age or younger to do to get into business?
Two things. Mm-hmm. Number one is stop studying and start doing.
So take action.
Go do. Do small, but go do. Tegan, you've met Tegan. He's 12. He's got a little small pressure washing business. Go.
That's your son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go do. The second thing is find people that are really, really good at something and go just learn from them.
That's a big thing I wanted to hit on. I was hoping you would say that.
Yeah. So we've got a guy that in our circle that is light years ahead of me in the multifamily space. And I'm a grown man who's got a pretty successful business and got a decent portfolio. And I just sat there and said, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to help you build your business. I just want you to teach me. So I'm going to help you find deals. If you teach me how you do that, I'll just be along for the ride, bro.
Mm-hmm. So just adding value to people.
Yeah. Just making other people's stuff better.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Adding value is such a buzzword term right now, but it's true. Like, how can I make your business better? So at the end of every conversation, I sit there and I look at Eric. I did it last time. We go, how can I help you? There may be something, but there may be something in 2 months where you go, hey, man, Thomas knows a lot about this. Maybe he can do this. Dude, there's nothing that excites me more than helping people do something. Because I know, and this is the selfish part of my brain, I know that if I help you do something, land a deal, hire somebody, you are going to feel obligated to help me.
It's going
to
come back around.
It's going to come back around. Whether it's karma or whether it's selfish of me to think that, I really don't care because I enjoy connecting people and helping people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I do know that at some point it's going to come back around.
Okay. I want to hit on people my age because I just feel like the younger generation is really struggling with this. How would you recommend people my age or younger or under the age of 30 or really just any age, I guess, to get into rooms like rooms that you're in right now to help you succeed?
There's somebody out there that knows about stuff that you want to know about. You can find them. The internet's a powerful thing. I think being bold and asking them, hey, can I take you to lunch? Hey, can I take you to coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Eric, tell me tell me when you're available and I'll make it work. I just want to ask you some questions.
So just getting vulnerable and putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good hearted people out there. There's a lot of good, and there's a lot of people out there that want to help other people. There's a lot that don't. You got to stay away from the people that don't. So I would say getting into groups. Now I'll say this, this I didn't think of. Your group, the Seven Figure Cartel,
right?
That's a great group. There's people in that group that can help you, correct?
Absolutely.
The group that I'm in the Sub 2 group. There's a lot of people in that group that can help me. So I guess the first thing would be just be vulnerable and ask people how you can help them, and just ask them questions. Number two, you got to pay to play. I mean, I've been in multiple things where I've paid someone to ask them questions, or I've paid someone to learn something, or I've paid someone to be in a group. There's mentorships and masterminds that are $50,000 a year, and people make that money back in less than 6 months. Do I recommend that? Not necessarily, but you paid $8,000. You can scrape together $8,000.
Yeah, of course.
You can scrape together $8,000.
You can put it on a 0% interest business credit card.
Yeah.
Have 12 months to pay it off.
Do that. If you can do that, but here's the thing. Just because you pay the $8,000 does not mean that you're going to just automatically have money start flowing in your account.
You got to take the action.
There is so much crap in those things, and they make a lot of money by people paying the money and not doing anything. But where they get huge, where these guys make a lot of money, is you pay the $8,000 and then you funnel people to him as far as referrals, but then also you figuring out making more money. And then a lot of times those guys want to do deals with you because you're killing it.
Of course, yeah. And it's not just the people running that course. Like, I almost learn more from the people, the other members like myself, just asking what they're doing, DMing them on Facebook. Hey, man, what are you doing? Let's get on a call, our own Zoom call. Like, it's not like there's, I think, 400 members in this group, 400 individuals who are doing exactly what I'm doing, solving problems every single day that I have problems with as well. So it's not just the one individual who's running the course. It's everybody else, all the team that's involved in it as well.
Here's the thing. People walk through the same road and see different things.
Exactly.
Me and Jackie will be in the car, and I'll say, did you see so-and-so? And she's clueless.
Mm-hmm.
But then she'll ask me the same question. I didn't see something.
You're both looking for different things.
And so Johnny, that's in Sacramento, sees and reads something totally different than you do, and he shares that with you, and it's a light bulb moment for you where he's like, oh, yeah, dude, you didn't see this?
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time. So I do agree. The people leading the groups are great, but the people in the groups are just as valuable.
Exactly. Like I said, I almost learn more from the people in the group than the people running the group.
Oh, absolutely.
So
what else?
If someone wanted to, I know you have a fund that you're starting. If someone wanted to invest with you, how would they do that?
So my email is the best thing, thomas@thomascox.co. So what we're doing with our new fund is you have to be accredited, which is, I mean, a barrier for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But what it is a fund where we are supplying, we're being the bank for people that are flipping homes. The biggest obstacle in business these days is lack of access to capital. And banks are just tightening the reins on their cash, rightfully so. And it takes so long to get money from a bank these days. You're looking at weeks, probably months even sometimes. And so what we do is we make it really easy for these guys that are doing real estate. They find a deal, they want to close, they call us, they say, hey, this is what we're doing. We can get the money to them. So we are in essence a bank. You invest in us, we give you a return on your money that's a lot higher than normal, and we fund these guys that are doing these homes. We got the people that we work with have captured audience buyers, so these homes are sometimes sold before they finish them. And so it's really, really good for him, really, really good for us, and really, really good for the investor, because people have to diversify in what they're doing. I am a huge believer in the market. We still dollar cost average every month. It's something we're going to do. That portfolio will keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a huge believer in taking our money and putting in other alternatives, meaning real estate, private money lending, things like that. I teach my kids this all the time. Our money is meant to make other money. So when your money goes out, it needs to bring friends back with it. Mm-hmm. So it's imperative that we, and we're also, I feel like we're given, there's a lot of people out there that make good money that don't understand alternative investing. And we can be that for, there's a lot of doctors for $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year earners that all they do is send their money to a financial planner. I know franchise owners that have multiple large franchise locations that all they do with their money is put it in the market. And that's fine to a certain extent, but you've got to be more diversified.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
You cannot. Yeah. You cannot do it. Now, we are relatively balanced. We are real estate, We are Market. We are IBC. IBC is the smallest of our like earnings right now, but the IBC money's going out and doing other deals.
Funding other things.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the best place to find it. It's a great thing, and I'm really, really excited about doing that. So
I think I wanna hit on this one thing real quick. So as far as don't put all your eggs in one basket, yes, that's smart to do. But at the same time, when you're starting out, focus on one thing. Be very, very niche. And when you're starting out, don't go out. If you want to go into real estate, don't start buying flips, doing wholesaling, rentals, sub two. Like, don't spread yourself thin like that. Really dive in on one thing specifically, and then just dive in on that. And then from there, once you build that one thing, then you can branch out to other sources as well.
Totally, totally agree. For years and years and years, we did multifamily. Mm-hmm. That's all we did. That's all we looked at. And then after that, we started doing some private money lending.
Exactly.
So, like, I totally agree with you. And there's a lot of people out there that say this. The number one place you can put your money is in your own business.
Yeah, I know exactly what kind of return I can get on my money in my business.
There's no doubt. And so growing your own active income is extremely, extremely important. Growing your active income is the most important thing, because if you can't grow your active income, your passive income is going to hit a ceiling really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because you can only save up so much money so quickly.
You can only save up so much. And you've got to be able to put your money in places where there are better returns. So,
exactly.
Perfect. Hey, this has been awesome. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Anything before we leave? Where can someone find you? The best place for someone find you again? You said social media?
Social media, definitely Instagram. Like I said, my username's EricSchafer_14. That's Eric, E-R-I-C, Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-E-R, _14.
Perfect.
Shoot me a DM.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Bye.